I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, let's have some fun today. One day early. I want to say it's because we're overachievers and we just can't wait to give you the luscious Autumn Windbag love. But we got tickets to see Shane Gillis Wednesday night. So recording it Tuesday night. Shane Gillis is coming to town. He's doing a show. He did a show last weekend, next weekend, and recording this Tuesday night on and on Wednesday night. It's like sold out, sold out, sold out. Pumped.
It's going to be a good time.
It'll be a good time. I'm telling you, it's Bill Burr, Dave Chappelle, 1A, 1B, and Shane Gillis is like just kind of underneath those guys. Like he's not legend status, but he came on quick, man. Like I didn't know who he was 4 years ago. And now he's like selling out everywhere. He's doing everything. He's on every podcast.
I mean, I heard of him a while back when that whole SNL thing happened. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he just kind of like put his head down and just kept doing shows and kept doing clubs and stuff and continued to write and got a podcast and just kind of like build himself back up, just unapologetically himself, which is amazing.
Well, he did that. He just like he took a risk and he did that special in Austin and just put it on YouTube. It's like it wasn't even monetized. He's just like, I'm just going to spend all this money and all this time to like do a venue, production value. And it's like tens of millions of views. And he's like, oh, wow, this guy's hilarious. And he's got a following and he can really do this shit. And now he's like one of the biggest comedians in the world.
Yeah.
You make a great Raider. You make a really good Raider because SNL canned him. And it's like the man, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, you get a lot of like, you get a lot of like G points. If SNL's like, whoa, 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 you're too edgy. You're too shitty. You know, we can't. You made that one joke a while ago that someone found and wanted to cancel you. So you can't work with the man. It's like, okay.
Dude, then going back on the show and hosting it and then hitting the hard R, dude, like not that one, but the Riri one. Oh, that was so sweet. It must have felt so good to tell that joke.
Oh, dude. So great. He was at the Tom Brady roast. I was bummed he didn't perform. It's got to be because he's on tour. He's like, look, I don't have time to like do a set at this level. Like I'm literally going to be down the road performing live in 3 days. And I was just performing live last night. I just can't do it. Because he seemed like he'd be phenomenal at like a sports-based roast. Because half those comedians don't watch sports. He's like one of the rare, like him and Bill Burr, like the sports fans that are stand-up comedy.
Oh, but Bill Burr is Mr. Boston too.
Yeah.
That would have been freaking hilarious.
That would have been great. I wonder what he would say, because he never gives anyone their props. So he'd be like, you brought us so many Super Bowls, but I hate your smile. So here's like 19 minutes of me just like ripping you, even though like you brought me so much joy.
With your chiseled jaw and your $10,000 loafers you're wearing.
Dude, the Kill Tony guy is the guy that killed it. You watched
Tony
it, right?
Hinchcliffe, yeah.
I mean, Hinchcliffe, oh my God, it was so good. Like, he just got up, he said, hey, sweet shoes, bitch. You get those in the divorce? He's wearing these, like,
so good.
These high, like, platforms. It's like, oh, those obviously were Giselle's.
Oh, God. He said, you should hire Dana White as your lawyer. He's used to screwing Brazilians out of money.
Half their purse.
So good.
So good. There was a Raider line. I forgot it. I watched the first half kind of hammered Sunday night. There was one Raider line. Do you remember what it was?
No.
Raiders were brought up one time in one line. If you guys remember, let us know in the comment section. I forgot what it was.
Drew Bledsoe was pretty good.
Because I thought he'd be just like a one-hit wonder. You're like, oh, hey, he took my job. LOL, that's so funny. But he had a lot of
He went in, dude.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I thought going in, you're like, all right, he's got one joke, and then what? But did the whole set. It was great.
The whole freaking set. He had a good 5-7 minutes.
You know what's really disappointing was Randy Moss. I thought with like a big personality like him, He'd be funnier.
I mean,
it goes to show you that there's like you'd like guys with like big fun personalities and guys that are funny. They the Venn diagram of those guys are there's pretty big, you know, pretty good. But it's not guaranteed. Like it's two different skills. And so to have like the timing and delivery of doing like basically a stand up, a roast versus just being like a funny, outgoing, good dude, it doesn't always bridge that gap. And Randy didn't.
Oh, I think the joke was he's like someone like rescued him from the Raiders.
Rescued him from Oakland. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
I mean, Randy Moss's like shit talk has always been about him and his play. Like, I'm better than you shit talk.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, doesn't have a lot of breath to him. You know what I'm saying? He's very linear. I mean, you're the freaking
just constantly freak scoreboard. Athlete. He's
yeah.
Like, scoreboard. Like I got
17 catches today.
But he's a good broadcaster. Like when he's like breaking down plays, he's like good energy and fun. Like he's
different, he sounds man. Great. But he knows. Just, he knows football.
Yeah. Doesn't know comedy. Poor guy.
Dag nabbit.
So real quick before we another off the beaten path topic. JPJ, if you just loving him more and more. Just this like God, great kid. Wrestler, badass player, seems like a team player. Just more the more stuff I find about him, the better. And it gets to the highest possible level I feel like a college athlete can attain. Not the Heisman Trophy, not breaking records in NIL, not All-American, not national champion, but he had a hamburger named after him. The Big Jacks. The Big Jacks Burger in Eugene, Oregon. Look at this. Look at this sexy beast. Look at that heart attack in between two buns. So this is what it is. The Big Jack's Burger ingredients. 2 double Angus beef patties. Double American cheese. 2 strips hickory bacon. Scoop of mac and cheese. Slow smoked pulled pork. House barbecue sauce mayo. Bun topped with a cheese bomb tater keg. I've never heard the phrase cheese bomb tater keg. But the second I did, I realized I've been wasting the 40 years of my life not eating cheese bomb tater kegs. That sounds phenomenal.
Yeah. So when I was in Minnesota, they had something similar because like 19 restaurants were claiming to have invented the Juicy Lucy burger. Uh-huh. But they also had one of those tater tots. And it's basically a huge, like oversized tater tot stuffed with cheese. That's basically what it is.
Okay, so not reinventing the wheel. Starch, carb, deep fried.
I mean, at Legends, the Herc Burger is very close to that.
Mm-hmm.
It is a double cheeseburger with mac and cheese on top.
It's almost too much to the point where it's like, I would like all these items separately on my plate. Like, let me get some scoops of mac and cheese, then I'll take a bite into my burger.
I think you're missing the boat, RJ. I think that is... It's pretty close to perfect. The only thing is missing a little avocado or something. You know, Mexicans love their avocado. But that sounds pretty damn good. There's no spice, though. I need some heat.
Yeah. Well, I guess like the house barbecue sauce is dependent on like what kind of barbecue sauce is it, right? Is
yeah.
It like
or maybe some
vinegar, jalapeno, some spice, some kick some to
jalapeno
it.
Jalapeno mac and cheese or something.
Maybe what an honor.
Pepper jack.
So we have a mutual friend. None of you guys know who he is, but he's a giant Dolphins fan. We've known him forever. And he went to this place called the Philly Grill in Huntington Beach 3 times a week for years and always ordered the same thing, thinking that they would eventually name it after him. That was his goal. Like he spent, I don't know how many thousands of dollars over how many years ordering the exact same thing, thinking, oh yeah, we're going to name this the Sean because Sean's been coming here forever and we're going to name it after him. They're like, what? They could never... They never did. They never cared. He moved to Long Beach, never went back all that time. And then he got JPJ strolling in there being like, yeah, I'm the shit at the University of Oregon. We're going to make a burger that's the size of Texas after you.
I guess if you eat it, you get it for free or something.
Eat the whole thing. It didn't look that crazy big.
No, dude, that bun is not a regular hamburger bun. That's a like a brioche big bun. That's a lot of food under there.
Maybe it didn't look that big because it was in JPJ's hands.
Possibly. But I mean, I don't know about you, man, but I can't eat the way I used to. I just can't do it.
No.
I used to be beautiful, man. I can't do it like that anymore.
Is it, so let me ask you this. Is it the way in or the way out?
No, it's the way in. I just get full way too fast. Before I was like, yeah, let's get another two plates or two rounds of Korean barbecue. Give me another one.
Every taco rib, you'd get like a meal and be like, we'll take 10 more tacos, and you just fucking crush it.
You just crush the tacos on the way home. Yeah, those are they make at home.
The first time I felt really, really old was in my early 30s. And when I went to go order some taqueria, my first thought wasn't, oh, it's so spicy going in. I was like, I got stuff I got to do tomorrow. I don't know if I can handle the going out. Because before, like, I would never get taqueria runs. You know, I never have to take a number three, if you know what the number three is. Right?
Oh, yeah.
It's a number one out of your number two. But then I turned like in my late 30s, I was like, okay, I got to start planning it. I have to like plan my next day around the burrito that I had the night before. Yeah, getting old.
I don't get heartburn by like things that would normally give you heartburn. Like spicy foods don't give me heartburn whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Maybe a really hot, almost like an Asian spice will get me. But regular ass pizza sauce, regular ass like marinara sauce. I'm like, oh boy, I need to watch out with this. I haven't had pizza. I don't know how long. I
haven't had heartburn since they fired Josh McDaniels. He's the one that gave me heartburn and diarrhea. Now I'm feeling better. he's like a giant bag of baby carrots and hummus. Once he's fired, settles everything down. So a little bit of news. We shall share with you. This coming from ESPN, Jeremy Fowler and company were just kind of doing pieces on every single NFL team after the draft. And it's, you know, what do they mean? What were their plans? It played out this way, how they want it to go. And this is what Fowler had to say. Much was made of the Raiders' draft plans and ultimate inaction at quarterback. Because remember before, like, I feel like the entire draft was kind of wondering what the Raiders would do. Trade up, trade back, quarterback, stay put, whatever. As it turns out, it was just pick where you're at. Here's what I know. They explored trading for Jaden Daniels, but any attempts were futile due to Washington's stance that it wasn't dealing the number two pick. Las Vegas also had interest in Michael Penix Jr., but most likely not in a trade up. He would have been considered at number 13 or in a trade back, or from multiple people in Vegas that the team did not want to reach. We ended up with one of the best weapons in the draft, said a team source about tight end Brock Bowers, the eventual 13th pick. Extremely versatile player, graded high by everyone. In fact, multiple NFL scouts told me that Bowers might have been the best overall player in the entire field, but positional needs pushed him out of the top 10. So kind of confirmed what we thought about Jaden Daniels. Of course they wanted him. Of course AP wanted him. But I was very bullish that anyone in the top three was going to move off of their spot, and that's basically what happened. And then I guess the rumors-ish were true that Michael Penix was kind of on the Raiders' radar, but they weren't going to trade up. And if anything, they wanted to kind of trade down and maybe hope he was still there versus taking him at 13 or trading up.
It was definitely something that I think you and I saw with a little bit of clarity. Mm-hmm. You can only make the offer that you think is fair. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the going rate isn't necessarily a subjective thing. Because if nobody pays for it, it's not the going rate, right? Yeah. And ultimately, if Washington wasn't selling no matter what, if they're like, you know what, this is our guy. This is the guy we can build around. That belief in that pick, if it's right, is more, you know, make more of an impact than any other. So you got to kind of have to stand on your convictions after, you know, a while. You can't always just, you know, trade back and lose out on some of these guys. So. I was a little bit, I think, more intrigued by what they would do had Penix got past Atlanta.
Yeah.
If they're saying they wouldn't have traded up whatsoever, or they weren't thinking about trading up, most are trading back. Who knows, man? Who knows what would have happened? We probably could have gotten him maybe at 15. or, you know, we may have gotten him a little bit later than that.
I think if the other five quarterbacks were drafted, because according to the Broncos, according to Sean Payton, Bo Nix was who they wanted, right? They wanted him over Penix and whoever, right? Even though he was the last of the six quarterbacks available by the time they got to 12.
Uh-huh.
According to him, he was the guy they wanted. Who knows if that's true or not? But I think if he was number six and the only one available at 13, I bet you the Raiders would have pulled the trigger. Just like, look, we're, yeah, let's,
possibly.
These guys are flying off the shelves. Let's take them.
I mean, who was it? The Rams, and who else was tied to them? Heavy trade-up talks. The Rams and someone else really wanted Brock Bowers, like, bad. I mean, it's a good thing. You know, Sean McVay wants a player that you picked. He wants him that bad where he's looking to trade up and get him.
He knows a thing or two about running a good offense.
Yeah, something like that, thing. Right?
Yeah.
So, man, it kind of confirms what I saw on the guy. I mean, I said it before. He's the biggest matchup nightmare in the draft. Maybe not the best receiver because there's a very explosive receivers. But as far as being tough to cover with who you want to put on him, yeah, he's bigger and faster than Marvin Harrison Jr. So it's interesting to speculate, but ultimately, they didn't have the opportunity to take the quarterback that they wanted. And there's a couple of different ways to look at it. I mean, you and I talked about it a lot. Like, do you take a quarterback at all just to take a quarterback? Or do you like two guys that you have on your roster and a third guy that you kind of like? Really, is it going to, you know, why would you spend a pick on a third guy when you have two guys that you really like? I guess that was their mentality after missing out on their top two, and none of the guys were worth the flyer from what they were under the impression. So it's just interesting how different teams view players and value. You know what I'm saying? Like, these guys are all in they're in the same league, right? They look at the same tape. It's just they see things so drastically different.
I think also we're underestimating what draft rooms are like. And there's always like some assistant scout in his first 6 months trying to make a name for himself. So he'll like pound the table for a guy, hoping he lands. Cause if he does, then he's the genius, right? I saw this guy. I knew it was him. There's so much of that politicking going on. I remember reading a story about, I think it was the 2020 election when it was still like the Republican National Convention, Democratic National Convention hadn't happened yet. There was like 10 potential candidates in both parties, right? And there's a story about how people report on politics. And they would find that guys that are reporting on these candidates wanted them to win because that took their career. Like, if you're, you know, if you're the beat writer for, you know, Robert Kennedy, like, you want him to be the nominee. Like, you want him to get there because that's going to take your career with you. You know, like, you're kind of like, you want to be objective, right? You're like, oh, I'm just going to report the facts and be fair. But career-wise, you want to hitch your wagon to a winner. And so you want that guy to go. Same thing happens in draft rooms. You're just like, all right, I think this guy's going to be it. I want to be the guy that found him or gets credit for this guy. Like, there's, because we like to think like, oh, they're all working together. They just want what's best for everybody. They're just trying to put the best field out there, the best players. It's like,
No,
man. Like, these are all individuals worried about what we are all worried about ourselves. Number one first and everything after.
Yeah. The production-based business doesn't end on the field.
Yep.
That is all throughout the NFL is a production-based business. So the scouts and all these guys want to move up the same way, and they want to have stuff on the resume the same way. So, yeah, it's the same. They all want to put that notch on their belt.
I wonder what they saw in those two quarterbacks that made them only want those two. I mean, obviously the Jaden Daniels AP connection is pretty obvious, but Michael Penix, I mean, it's not like they're both similar quarterbacks, right? Like, they're both different skill sets in a lot of ways, but there was the only two they wanted. I wonder why.
As far as passing goes, they're very similar as far as being able to throw the ball deep.
Just fucking
and being accurate.
Just like whip the wrist and give like a 50 yeah. yarder.
Deep and accurate. Both do that. They're both mobile to extend plays. Jaden Daniels is just a lot more dynamic. He's just as dynamic running the ball as he is throwing it, whereas Penix isn't. So that's the main difference that I see. And because of that dynamic running ability, he's able to get bigger chunk plays because he puts the defense on their heels a little bit more. Whereas Penix, you know pretty much where he's going to be. But as far as throwing the ball, yeah. I mean, again, Penix didn't show a lot of throws over the middle. But, you know, like we talked about in the draft, you know, absence of evidence isn't evidence of absence. I mean, if I had those guys on the outsides, I would be just throwing on the outsides too. You know, if I had McMillan and Polk and Odunze, I would throw the ball outside the numbers all the time.
Three top 15 receivers.
Yeah. I would just throw them out. I would throw it deep all the time too if I had these guys. Yeah. So it's the way the offense was designed. Not a lot of stuff over the middle, just a lot of drag routes and stuff really short. Maybe a seam route here and there for a tight end that pops. But, I mean, they were an outside throwing team. So I think there are some similarities passing the ball, but Jaden Daniels was a much better prospect because he's of his dynamic play with his legs.
Normally these like post-draft woulda, coulda, shouldas, I don't really read because what's the point? Unless it's a brand new GM on your team and you're wondering what's happening. It's a whole new squad, so I want to know. What was the thought process? What were they looking at? Why did they like Penix and Jaden and not, you know, Nix and whoever? Like, how aggressive were they? It doesn't sound like he was very aggressive in trying to trade up. It was just kind of like, we'll see. We'll figure it out. You know, trade down. We'll see. We'll figure it out. Just most likely was just going to stick in a spot. Best player available. These are all things I'm trying to learn about Telesco. Again, I've said it 100 times. We got to look back on who he's drafted with the Chargers, but the thought process, what he didn't do, what he tried to do, what he got away with, what he didn't get away with. These are all things I want to learn about Telesco. So I pay attention to it more this season than I would most seasons.
I was talking to somebody at work, and I said, well, it just seems like Telesco is like he takes the approach that Anderson Silva takes to a fight. He's a
bunch of steroids?
Yes. And you remember when he came down to Michael Jackson, he had the little hat on like in Pride and he had the high water pants and shit. That's so hilarious. So he's good, right? So he's good at what he does. So he's a good evaluator of talent. He takes good picks with especially the high picks, right? But he's patient. He's patient, but when the time is right, and there's a mistake made, he's going to pounce on it. So he has his one or two guys. Okay, these are the guys that I would move up for. If it doesn't work, okay, fine. My drafting, my ability is going to be able to get me through this, and I'm going to be fine. But when that opening comes up, I'm going to go for it, and I'm a good finisher, right? So unfortunately, he wasn't able to end the fight like Anderson Silva, but he was able to just, you know, pretty much dominate, especially in the early rounds. He got two top 25 guys, you know, the first 44 picks. That's pretty damn good.
He's like a robot, which is what we need at GM. You don't want yeah. passion. You don't want emotion. You don't want like intuition. Like, oh, I really feel that. Like, no, that's AP's job. AP's the rah, rah emotion guy. You need the flip side of that coin. Just a very sober mind. Let's do the math. Let's see the scouting report. Let's check the value. What's everyone else doing? Get the best guy available. Done.
That's okay. This happened. That happened. That happened. Okay, what does the board say?
This is the move.
That's the move.
This is what we agreed to 3 days ago. We're not changing because the board, you know, we said this was going to happen. This is what we're going to do. Right?
Okay.
That's what we're doing.
Scenario number one, trade up for Jaden Daniels. Scenario number two, take Penix if he's there at 13. If one and two aren't there, look at the board.
Best player available.
Best player available and grab him. And, I mean, it's kind of hard to argue with it, you know. Mm-hmm. It really is,
and it's long-term thinking, which is good, right? Like, there's all this like APs. We're gonna win now, and you know, they're Christian Wilkins, giant signing. Like, there's some win now mentalities here too. But then what? Tom Telesco's like, okay, we're gonna try to win now, AP, but we still have to think 2026, 2027, 2028. My job is to also think about the future. We're gonna try to win now. I'm on board, Antonio. We are going to try to win now, but we also got to keep an eye on the future. And this is how we're going to do it, is with this very sober best player available. Certainly not a need. Another pass catcher is probably our strongest group on the team. But for how long? Devontae's getting a little older. Maybe Jacoby gets hurt. We let Hunter go. We're going to need some pass catchers. We got potentially the Hall of Fame level talent.
Dude, he's
slow and methodical.
He is a, I can't understand people who are still questioning the pick with, because just what we talked about, their scenarios didn't pan out. So they got the best player on their board. This guy's, a lot of people put him as the best football player in the draft, regardless of position. Mm-hmm. And he's definitely the biggest matchup nightmare.
So who is going to be throwing him the ball is the question. Ooh. Gardner Minshew or number 12, Aiden O'Connell. Switch from 4 to 12.
Three times better.
Triple. He's triple the quarterback he was last year as number 4. So there's been multiple reports. We've been hearing AP say it's Favre's job to lose. Like, well, he's earned the right to be the guy. It'll be a quarterback battle, but he's earned the right. It's like, well, there's a lot of money that Gardner Minshew is getting that maybe says something different. We're getting conflicting reports from different beat writers. Vic Tafer, our friend at The Athletic, Gardner Minshew in all likelihood will be the Las Vegas Raiders starting quarterback when the season opens in September. Tafer wrote that last week. O'Connell has earned the right to compete against Minshew, but the Raiders didn't give Minshew all that money because he has a sweet mustache. Well, that would, I would want to give him that kind of money with that kind of mustache too. And while we're on it, it's really $25 million, as it's hard to see the Raiders being in a position where they would cut him next year and take a $14 million dead salary cap hit rather than pay him $10 million, which is true. It's a true two-year deal. On draft day, NFL Network's Ian Rappaport seemed to take a similar position to Tafer. Another quarterback, this is Rappaport's tweet, the Broncos, who just traded for Zach Wilson, now take Bo Nix at number 12, their quarterback of the future, which means the Raiders are out of first-round quarterbacks. It's Gardner Minshew time in Las Vegas.
Sounds like it.
So maybe not, you know, like a direct report, but he's like, hey, if the chips fall this way, that means Gardner Minshew is going to be the guy in Las Vegas. However, there's a conflicting report from SI. Hondo Carpenter. I'm telling you what the people inside are telling me. It is Aiden's job to lose. He's going to have to hold it. Everyone's going to get a chance to compete, and we'll see what happens. So, some conflicting reports, Soto, on who the QB1 is right this second, May 7th, 9:21 p.m. Western Standard Time.
Yeah, this is a tough one. This is a tough one because you can look at it from a couple different perspectives. They can both be right. They can be like, hey, they paid Minshew all that money to be the starter, but it is a competition, which all of them said it was a comp. There was a competition going on.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's no heads up anywhere because it's a new system for both of the guys. So whoever went, fucking bug, what the heck was that? Whoever plays the best in the preseason is going to win. Or whoever plays the best, you know, in training camp and all that, it's going to win. And it's not, doesn't matter who was given money to or who was here last year. I think they both might be right. It is Aiden O'Connell's job to lose because he already had it. So it is his to lose because he already had it. He needs to win it. And if he loses it, it's not because Minshew made more money. It's because Minshew played better.
There is something to be said about who has. I'm with you. Like I fully believe that it's a quarterback battle in Las Vegas. But on the flip side, whoever has the inside track has the inside track. Like, if they're already kind of like thinking in the back of their minds, whether it's AP, whether it's Telesco, whether it's Mark Davis, whether whoever, right? If there's someone that like, well, I think this is going to be the guy until proven otherwise. That's very, very different than open competition, right? It's just two numbers. Whoever does best is the best, as opposed to, well, I think this is going to be the guy unless he screws up. Two very different scenarios.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of people have opinions on it. And we all know Hondo sometimes is just, you know, maybe.
What do we know about Hondo?
Look, I like the dude. I've never met him personally. Mm-hmm. We've just heard a lot that he's kind of a reporter in the truest sense. He'll report what he's told to report. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's fine, whatever. He has a job to do and everything, and he gets a lot of good information because he's able to do that. But just because he says, "I'm telling you, it's this guy's," I mean, that's, it could be a smokescreen, because it's like, okay, let me just put it out there. Let me have a different opinion out there, so not everyone is jumping on the "it's Minshew's job to lose."
Yeah,
you know, bandwagon.
And I mean, and in fairness, Antonio Pierce has been saying it. It's like it runs through Farva. It's, you know, it's Aiden O'Connell's, you know, he's earned the right, blah, blah, blah. So it's not like he's saying something outlandish that AP hasn't been saying for a while now. So it's,
I just, the thing is no one else is saying that.
Yeah. I also wonder, and we've talked about it, is this just AP being a great coach, giving Farva as much confidence as possible? Here's a fourth round guy. He was the eighth out of nine quarterbacks on the depth chart at one point when he was in college, thrown into the fire, the stink of Josh McDaniels all over him, no first round, you know, no QB1 reps. And he's like just trying to make a season out of it. And it's AP saying, like, you can do this. You have 1,000% of my confidence, Aiden O'Connell, that you can be this guy. Which, you know, and Aiden O'Connell's a dumbass. If Minshew beats him out, he's not going to pout or, you know,
he's going to stay ready.
He's going to be ready, right? But the confidence that AP can give him by giving him that much, you know, that much love and saying, like, I believe in you, that could go far. It could go far for a guy that's been underdogging his whole football career.
Yeah, look, Aiden O'Connell is not weak-minded. He was number eight on the depth chart. He had a late offer to go somewhere, and he decided to walk on to Purdue. And he beat everyone else out finally. Mm-hmm. And so he's not weak-minded. Like, this is not bothering him. But it is a little bit of a spark to reiterate the fact that this is still a fair competition. It's not a foregone conclusion that you're going to be the backup. Like, you can win this if you play better.
Coach Enger, my linebacker coach in high school, I had the highest respect for him, and I wanted to be the best linebacker for him. Like, I just loved him as a coach. I remember every compliment he ever gave me in high school because it meant that much to me.
Damn, Arnie, you don't smell that bad today. Oh my, like, God.
Jesus Christ, Clifford, put your dick away. You're scaring the children. No, but like, I remember, like, you told me, like, multiple times, RJ, you got great instincts. You got to make sure you follow them. I was like, okay, yeah, yeah. Like, RJ, you play twice the size that you are. I was like, oh my God, thanks, coach. Like, I remember all that shit, right? Like, now imagine having, and he was, you know, just a cool high school coach that played high, you know, I think he played some JC ball, right? Imagine having a Super Bowl champion, Antonio Pierce, saying, Aiden, you can fucking do this. This is your team. It is your job to lose. Go out there and prove it. Being like, yes, yes, sir. I'll do it. I'll run through a brick wall right now, AP. Means a lot.
Yeah, man. And that's it means a lot. And it's all going to be positives. Because if you get two guys trying their very freaking hardest, knowing that if they perform better, they're going to be the starter. We're going to have one hell of a freaking shootout. We're going to have one hell of a competition, and it's just going to make the other guy even hungry to get back on the field.
What's the best compliment you ever received?
Like sports wise or just in general? So when I had my business right now, I was traveling a lot to like Florida and stuff. I stayed my initial time that I went to like open the center and all that stuff and hire all the people. I was staying with the family of one of my partners over there. He had his dad, his family, his dad's family, whatever, right? Well, his brother-in-law, had a couple of daughters that were, you know, a little older, maybe like in their mid teens or whatever. I was like probably in my mid 30s. And, you know, they didn't know me from anybody. I'm just a guy that showed up and I was just there, right? And after I was there for 3 weeks, and after the first week, he comes up to me and he's like, so I got to tell you something. And I'm like, all right. He's like, you're just a good dude, man. Like, you're a good dude. Like, if my chicks, my girls, if they can marry a guy like you, I'd be pretty happy, man. You can hang out with us anytime. This is like Tampa, Florida.
He's obviously a terrible judge and character if he's saying that to you.
Yeah, I don't know how I fooled him for that long. Right. But that was the compliment that made me feel like, huh, all right. That's because this is like, these are, there's Miami, Florida, and then there's the rest of Florida, the South, the country, right? These are like strong, wake up at the crack of dawn, work hard every day, you know, follow your word, like be true to your word type of like down home people. Mm-hmm. And for him to just like, he didn't have to say anything. We were sitting out back drinking a beer. He didn't have to say anything like that. But, for him to just, like, go out and say it, like, even his wife was like, the hell's that?
Should I leave? Start blowing each other?
Listen.
Crazy. To me, it's, like, not so much what's said, but who said it. Kurt Angle told me one time I looked like a wrestler, which would be an insult to a lot of people.
Not by Kurt
and not to me. I was like, oh my God, Olympic gold medals just said I looked like a wrestler. Is it because my face was smashed? Is it because I had cauliflower ear? I don't know. But I will never, ever forget. It's like, you look like a wrestler. It's like, damn straight.
He swallowed back the tears.
Wrestler want to cry right now. So free agency is underway. We talked about Michael Gallup last show. They've picked up a bunch of unrestricted free agents, guys, undrafted rookies, et cetera. They made two semi-decent signings this week. Andres Pete, O-lineman, three-time Pro Bowl guard, 2018, 2019, 2020. Problem is, he can never stay healthy. He was a fixture of the Saints for a long time. When he was at his best, he was fantastic. Health has been an issue, and finally the Saints are like, okay, we're not going to deal with it. That's why we picked him up. Again, another guy that could easily be a starter for us unless age has ravaged him and he's going to get hurt too much.
I think in a limited role, this is a home run pick. Mm-hmm. It's a home run signing because this is when he was one of the first big surge of kicking in career tackles into guards. So what, like, he was like a big guard. Mm-hmm. And it's because of his mean streak, his blocking, his footwork. Like, this guy was a big dude that could move. And he was like as smooth as a tackle, but at the guard position. And if we can give him a little bit of work here and there to spell a guy, be a swing player on the line, and keep him healthy, just give him a couple reps here and there. I think I definitely could be a home run pick or a home run pickup.
Yeah. I mean, he has all the, all the reasons why he's a free agent or a parent, right? Older, injury history, et cetera. But that's why you roll the dice on guys like that. Cause if he can get, like, I remember like Richie Incognito not that long ago, like, he had his issues, but when he was healthy and on there, he was just such a great asset to the team.
Boy, did he have his issues.
Oh, did he have issues, right? But same thing with Pete. Yeah, like, he's, again, at a position of need. O-line needs help. It needs depth. And, he's not going to be asked to carry this important slot that's his. It's just like, all right, contribute, try to stay healthy.
Be a coach, on the line, mm-hmm. Teach these young guys the little tricks of the trade that he's learned. And it's, I don't see any negatives besides the potential for injury, but he's currently healthy now. And we've seen a lot of players that are, like, Baltimore is a great example. They couldn't keep anybody. They can't keep anybody healthy over there. Maybe the strength and conditioning, maybe some of the practice facilities or how they do things, who knows, but maybe we could keep them healthy over here. Who knows?
Another one, Raiders get another wide receiver, this time a Charger. Wide receiver Jalen Guyton signing with Las Vegas Raiders. Second free agent wide receiver to land with the Raiders, since obviously Michael Gallup, like we mentioned. And of course, Tom Telesco is very, very aware of who he is and what he's capable of. We're on a 4.39.40. Remember, I was telling you at the gym last week, I was like, I'd like to add a little bit more, one more speed guy. Give me one more speed guy. That's Jalen.
There we go. Move.
Now, he's coming off an ACL surgery a season and a half ago. So is he still a 4.39 guy? I don't know. But he's someone that can open up the back end of that D.
Definitely. I mean, he still might be able to be 4.39 straight line, but does he play that on a football field now? That's the big difference. It's not the straight line speed. It's your overall football speed, which is change of direction, stuff like that, pace, starts and stop and start, stuff like that. So with a speed guy like this, I've been saying it for a while. I mean, I've been thinking of it for a while, but I think it's the first time I've actually told it on air. Speed guys, you want speed guys to learn from Davante Adams because he thrives off of burst. He thrives off of change of direction, off of stutter stepping and pausing and hesitations. That's where he gets open. And if he can teach a little bit of that with a guy who is significantly faster, I mean, it's all good from here.
Well, and also, like, you've got, I would say, like, the deepest, other than kickers, I think our deepest room is wide receiver, like pass catchers in general. But you want to be at a point where, like, there's a 50-50 shot he even makes the roster, like, probably doesn't make the roster. Like, this is a guy that, you know, he had one decent season with the Chargers, runs super fast, not a lot of issues with him. You want to be able to say, like, let's bring in all these guys, and if they don't make it, they don't make it. Like, you want to have a team so good, especially what your strength is going to be, and it seems like pass catcher right now. You want it to be like, oh, who do we keep? Guyton or Gallup? One of them has to go. That's the kind of problems winning teams have, is they have to let players that can contribute go because they just got guys that are better.
Yeah, so, like, we've let a couple of guys go that have gone other places and done pretty well. Mm-hmm. And this is a different thing. We're not letting guys go because we miss-scouted their talent. We're going to let guys go because we just got too much in certain positions. And it's different. We haven't been in that position for a while. We haven't had that depth on a roster for a long time.
Did you attach chains to your cats and they're dragging them around like the ghost?
No, this freaking guy...
Look, I just hear chains clanging in the background.
It's a bell. So there's this, like, it's like a hook thing that you put that you clamp onto the top of a window. Oh, a window, sorry, the top of a, like, a door frame from underneath, and like a really like a rubbery string on there. It's really strong. And on the end of it is a toy mouse with a bell on it. And this idiot
doing a podcast.
Yeah. This idiot does it. Play with it all day, but when I'm on air, he wants to go out there and play with it. And now that we talked about it, he stopped.
He's been shamed. Good. Emotional abuse. That's how you take care of cats in the Soto household.
Never. Mission
accomplished. Some breaking news. I've been kind of following it on Twitter. Again, we're recording this Tuesday night, 9:37 p.m. West Coast time. And I've been following this story, and it looks like it's a done deal. The Raiders training camp is moving to Costa Mesa.
Ooh, ooh.
About 20, 25 minutes from where I am sitting right this second. Costa Mesa in Orange County, California. At a high school down there. So the Raiders will have use of the complex for training camp maintenance. There's 1-6 fields use. They have a fee for the Jack Hammett Sports Complex that they'll use there, and they'll pay for some improvements. But it's... Raiders approved 1-year deal to hold training camp in Costa Mesa. It's awesome. We're right down the street.
Right down the street.
I love it too because it's such temperate weather down here. So when it's like a harsh summer, you want to be kind of close to the beach, West Coast, not overheat, right? You want to be able to play outdoors without it being too big of a deal. And it's like a nice spot where you can get what you need. You're not in the middle of nowhere, but you're really not in a party area either. You're not downtown Miami or downtown Phoenix or, you know, on the strip in Las Vegas.
It's more of a mellow spot.
It's a mellow. Yeah. Like, I mean, you, if you're looking for trouble, you'll find it. You're in Southern California. But if you're just like, hey, I want to just like put my head down and work. Weather's good. Facilities are there. If I need a great doctor, a great physical therapist or whatever, they're tons. It's all around. Yes. You're in Southern California, right? Like whatever you'll need, you'll be able to find. But selfishly, I love how they're 20 minutes away from us. It's gonna be awesome. We should do some shows there.
I'm ready to go. Yeah, for sure.
Costa Mesa City Council voted 7-0 to approve the deal.
Oh yeah.
Raiders will pay $165,000 in rent and hold a youth training camp at the facility. Some donations from the team.
It's funny how like that's the same fields that the Chargers have used the last few years. Mm-hmm. The Raiders want to use it. Like, we got to make some $600,000 improvements over here. These fields are not up to snuff.
Unlike in Henderson, Raiders fans will be able to attend practices in some capacity in Costa Mesa.
So thick right now.
Oh, that's going to be great. Like I said, the Chargers were there most recently. Then they moved to El Segundo. I wonder how they chose this random city and this random high school. Of all like the high schools in all the cities, why?
No, it's actually it's not a high school. It's a sports complex.
Well, they're doing stuff at the high school too. I read somewhere, but yeah, it's like the complex is their main spot, and they're gonna pay to like use it and renovate it and all that shit.
So look, the Rams built complex. The Chargers built their own complex over by SoFi. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's part of that whole build out. So there's that. So Jack Hammond is left kind of holding the bag, like, okay, well, we don't have this revenue that we've had the last few seasons. It worked out pretty good. Let's see if we can get someone else in here. And I don't know that the Raiders would put as much money as they're making. I don't know that they'd put that much money into upgrading a complex if they're just going to be there for one season.
It's smart business for a couple of reasons. One, like anytime you're back in Southern California and there's, you know, shit ton of Raider fans down here, you want to, you know, give them something.
Yeah. You're acknowledging sense. The fact that there's still a huge fan base in the Los Angeles area.
Like, you know, resurge the fan base a little bit, you know, two, obviously Tom Telesco knows what it's like, right? When he was with the Chargers forever. So his input was obviously used and he gave it the stamp of approval. So now this means that five NFL teams will hold training camps within 100 miles of each other. So the Rams are in Woodland Hills and the Chargers. The Cowboys are in Oxnard. I didn't know this. The Saints are going to be at UC Irvine randomly in Orange County.
It's sticky as fuck in the summer in New Orleans, dude.
Well, I get why they're getting out of there. But SoCal, man, place to be for training camp.
You have like UC Irvine has really nice facilities. They just don't have a football team. Mm-hmm. So it's like they have all these huge and nice facilities that just aren't being used during the summer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, get some use out of them.
I'm pleased to welcome the Las Vegas Raiders and their loyal fans, Raider Nation, great city of Costa Mesa for training camp this summer. Costa Mesa Mayor John Stevens did a news release. All right. Welcome to Costa Mesa, Raider Nation. You'll love it. Good Mexican food. You ready to do some What a Windbags? We're kind of at a weird time. We're diving into something else. Let's just do some What a Windbags.
Fine.
Let's do it. Oakland fan 5262. We're talking about how Reggie McKenzie fell asleep at the combine. Apparently, it wasn't him. That was Raleigh, his brother, when Reggie threw him a bone to be on the staff. I love that everyone still thinks it was Reggie, although the way he drafted linebackers, I'm sure he was sleeping. Jack Del Rio, Ken Norton Jr., and Reggie all played linebacker. None of them can find one of Ray Lewis and Brent Urlacher were in the same room. So we'll take a correction when we make an error. Yeah, it wasn't Reggie.
I don't know, man.
Although that would be an evil genius move for Reggie McKenzie just to like hire his brother to be his scapegoat. Like,
well, that wasn't me.
Yeah. My brother, like, that's why he's here. It's like, let me fuck up and blame it on someone else. Daniel M. 3434. Max will find out real quick if he, Brock Bowers, can block. Look what going against Max and Kuntz did for Mayer. Yes. Brock Bowers will learn very quickly if he can block or not. And if he doesn't learn quickly, he better learn quickly. Or it's going to be a very, very rough training camp in Costa Mesa with Max, Brock, Tyree, all those guys on the end, just eating them up. Love it.
Oh, yeah. The NFL, one young another. Exactly. Yeah. And like I was saying, a lot of Brock Bowers' blocking at the college level was against linebackers and DBs because he was split out a lot, out in space a lot. He didn't really get a lot of rooting the defensive ends out of their position. That really wasn't his thing.
And,
most of the time it wasn't.
And in fairness, that's probably not the best use of him. Just lining him up next to a tackle and say, hey, fucking take on Khalil Mack. Like, that's not the best use of his skill set. And that's what I was saying before is like, look, this is obviously an insane athlete, but he's less plug and play than Marvin Harrison Jr. or just like an insane wide receiver, insane running back. It's like, there's going to have to be, you're going to have to scheme specifically for Brock Bowers, which isn't the end of the world, but it's unlike other positions. Cause he's like, he's technically a tight end, but he's more just kind of like a universal weapon. You don't want him to just line up and block like a tight end. You don't want him just kind of line up and run like a receiver. You want to get him in motion, have him chip block, have him in the backfield, have him, you know what I mean? You gotta make a customized
situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you're not just going to plug him into your offense. No. You're not going to be like, oh, here's my tight end.
You're not going to put him on the end of the line and be like, yeah, we're going to slide protection the other way. You got the DN by yourself. Like, wait a second. What? What happened?
It's not what you do with Bowers.
No, definitely.
That's what the offense is, their work cut out for him is, you know, you can't completely change your offense to just cater to one rookie, but you can't use that kind of draft capital and not maximize the pick. Right. It's very Tom Telesco. Like, if we're going to spend this much draft capital on this pick, Our first round pick, we got to make it count. Got to make it worth our while. Otherwise, we would just picked up a corner or a tackle or and something we can plug and play with what we were doing.
Yeah, man, we need to really keep that in your back pocket, everyone. Keep that in your back pocket. Remember when we talked about last offseason about Josh McDaniels and how he handles Hunter Renfro? Keep that in your back pocket. That's going to be kind of a litmus of how it's going to work. If McDaniels really turned the corner, is he going to do this and that? It didn't work out because he just didn't want to do it. He was very set in his ways. Let's see what Getsy can do in this offense with a weapon like Brock Bowers, because it's not like, well, maybe if we do this, he can perform. It's like, no, this guy is going to perform. You got to put him in the right spot. So we'll see what Getsy's got.
Excellent point. I completely forgot that Hunter Renfro analogy that we used. Clearly, that clearly showed JMD wasn't changing when Hunter Renfro just completely disappeared.
He better change his underwear, that motherfucker.
Jack Bryan, 4676. Hey, kids, it's no longer AOC4. It's now AOC12. You know what that means? Tom Brady can't be on this team now. How sweet would it be if Tom Brady, in like all of these wildest imaginations, becomes part owner halfway through the season? I don't know. Minshew gets hurt. And he's like, all right, I'm going to come back. And Favre's like, all right, you can be number four. I'm wearing 12. I got the start of the season. It's mine.
Not for sale. Numbers taken. Like, was it Forrest Gump? Seats taken.
Seats taken.
Numbers taken.
He just big swinging dicks, Tom Brady. Oh, sweet.
Can't sit here. And then freaking Derek Carr's in the corner. You can have this number if you want.
Come to New Orleans.
Come to New Orleans. You can have this number if you want.
Oh, so sweet. All right, that's it for us. I'll be in China for next week's show. Hopefully, I'll be able to do it. Weird timing wise. Again, thank you everyone for being able to watch this a day early. We'll be when you're watching this, we'll probably be hammered, laughing our asses off to Shane Gillis, the form.
All right. Now that you said you were going to be in China, I got a story to tell really quick.
Okay.
There was this kid at the gym who's a younger kid, but he's really funny. He's probably like maybe 9 or 10 years old. Really funny. He has kind of like a fighter sense of humor. It's kind of sick, kind of twisted a little bit, but you know, for a 10-year-old.
Screw loose.
Yeah, screw loose, right?
Naturally.
And there, and there's a guy at the gym. He's part Asian, right? And we're like talking, whatever. And the guy and the older guy, the part Asian guy, his phone rings, and it's like a regular like ringtone, right? And the kid said, hey, I didn't expect that ringtone to come out of your phone. And then he's like, well, what kind of ringtone do you think I'd have? And the kid's like, I don't know, something like bung 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 bung. And I'm just like, oh, dude. I'm like, first off, okay, first, number one, that's funny. Number two, you can't say that, dude. Don't do that. but it just caught me so off guard. I'm like,
out of the mouth of babes. You
dude,
know?
Don't, no. Okay, that was funny, but don't do that. don't say that.
You're going to get canceled like if you were 5 years older, you know?
Oh, God. I debated like split second in my mind. Do I acknowledge how funny that was? Or do I just go right into like, don't say that? Like, no, I have to, you know, hey, listen.
Be the dad. Maybe
you could be the Shane Gillis of the future. Just don't do that. Not right now. Don't do that.
You got to work in your delivery if you're going to do
that. Yeah. Oh, it was good, though. So awesome. Good.
We'll leave you on that. Until then.
Knock on wood if you're with me.